Dan and Charlie and Fung.
Fung's here.
How are you?
Good, very good. Yourself?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
Hi, everybody. This is Dale.
Hey, Dale.
Hello, Dale.
Hi, Dale.
Hi.
Hey, Dale.
Perhaps as many as a half a dozen.
And Dan Savage, who hopefully is going to be on. He's going on vacation today, but he's the one who has put up some issues that he wanted to discuss. So give him a few minutes. So, anything new and exciting with anyone's life? A bunch of boring people.
No, it's the summer, you know. You want it not to be exciting.
Oh.
Well, I hate to bring up that the Tigers are in first place in their division, Mike.
But what record?
Who cares?
Is there anyone left in Detroit to go watch them?
They come in from the suburbs.
Okay.
Yeah, and from Windsor, Canada. Yeah.
Although I saw that Detroit did not lead the list in foreclosures last month.
Well, it's because they've already all foreclosed.
Something they're justifiably proud about.
Yeah, we have to be ahead of something. Yeah.
Well.
Although today is a banner day in Detroit. They're having an election for the city council, the best and the brightest of the city. And they're choosing 9 out of 168 candidates.
That's good.
And the betting money is on how many of the convicted felons will be elected.
Somebody has to represent convicted felons, right?
Representation by your peers.
That's right.
Yep.
We had Harold Carswell for the Supreme Court to represent the mediocre.
Yeah.
Well. All right, we'll start, and hopefully Tim will, Dan will,
several more,
and if not, I will convey some of his concerns or questions that he had about, that he wanted to discuss about Tim's project, or Tim's new project. Everyone, I'm assuming, got the new acknowledgement or the publication acknowledgement that's been standardized and went out to everybody. And so if you do publish anything that's funded in part by CFAS funds, if you could include that in the acknowledgement section, that would be appreciated. If anyone needs that, Jill can send it out to them. Was that Dan?
This is Charlie.
Hey, Charlie.
We're in the middle of a big thunderstorm, so we might get knocked out. I've been knocked out twice already.
My gosh.
Very unusual. Can't see in 10 feet ahead of it.
No, it's about 75 here today. A little cloudy, but not too bad. This is a tough place to live in San Diego. Has anyone heard anything about any ARRA funds that they may have applied for? I'll start by saying that my competitive renewal probably will not be funded. It did not do as well as we would have hoped, but we were not optimistic about it to begin with.
Ed, was that scored under the new system?
Yes, it was. And
can you comment on that scoring system at all?
No. It's somewhat confusing depending upon the type of application you've submitted, where some of the scores for the challenge grants, the scores for challenge grants and the scores for supplements don't align at all, where a score of 40 or 50 in the challenge grants is a reasonable score, score, although not fundable, that's not a very good score in the competitive renewal. So maybe Dale has more input.
No, except to say that it's probably a kind of a sorting out time. It's new to everyone. and we can only hope that you know, they'll take on more meaning. I'm sure it'll you know, in a few cycles start to feel like the old system, as good as that can be.
So just, you want something under a 20, I guess, and then I guess you're doing all right.
Yeah. I was just gonna say that just like before, the overall scores get averaged, and this time they get multiplied by 10, so you're looking at two-digit numbers. And yeah, I think it's going to have to be, in my sense, is less than 30, you know, to be probably flirting with the funding line. But it's all kind of, you know, we're learning as we go.
Is that for the challenge grants?
And it depends on the mechanism, but for challenge grants, you know,
it's going
to have to be below the fifth percentile.
I have some good news on the challenge grant front. We submitted one, yes, Kathy, we submitted one with Al Johnson and Martin Steiner for working on speeding up DTI so we can use it in live animals. And it got a raw score of 11.
Wow.
And that put it in the one percentile.
Yeah.
Wow, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, we were astounded, just astounded. So
that's like really, a bazillion dollars for 2 years.
A million dollars for 2 years, yeah.
That's fantastic news, Kathy. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we were tickled. We haven't gotten a funding notice yet, but and considering that they said they were only going to fund 200 of about, what, 2,000 or so.
Like 20,000.
20,000 or so. The top one percentile still may not get it funded.
I think one percentile is probably going to be good enough. And from what I understand is that they went, recommendations were made to the NIH on Monday, and then I think they go to the White House.
Wow.
And so it probably will be a while before you hear, but I think one percentile is probably pretty good. And was that through NIAAA or through General Medical Sciences?
It was a general thing. I don't think it was NIAAA specific.
It was, if I might interrupt, it was assigned to NIAAA, but the first consideration will be by the NIH Office of the Director to fund it. So the $200 million that you see in the notice is what the Common Fund or the NIH, you know, central office has committed. And then those that don't get funded from that pot will then trickle down to the institutes. So, you know, I'm very optimistic that will get funded and hopefully by the from the central pot of money, because I think it's really exceptional.
Well, that's fantastic. So, obviously none of this would have happened if we hadn't gotten involved with the consortium, and you know, the consortium, you know, fostered this up to this point. And then, and I think that what comes out of this challenge grant obviously will be very important to our effort for the consortium as well, our continuing effort. So,
for the renewal,
all's working together, and we're very thankful.
And, you know, for the renewal, because that challenge grant will run out about the time we're putting in for the resubmission for the...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That should work well, but again, congratulations. Any other people have challenge grants, either good news or bad news? Hey, do people have applications in? I mean, or for the ARRA money?
We put in for an administrative supplement for the informatics corps, but I don't think we've heard anything.
Well, it probably should be being reviewed or has been reviewed in the last week or so.
Well, so I think Andy's referring to an administrative supplement request.
Oh, okay.
And those are unlike the other mechanisms, the challenge grants, even the competitive revisions. They don't go through a study section. Those are just handled administratively, the way administrative supplements are in general. And that came to my division, and we've spent down the money that we had for administrative supplements, and it was very difficult because there was $13 or $14 requested for every single every dollar we actually had. And so a lot of the large requests, we just could not accommodate them. And so I think it's not going to get funded at this point unless perhaps additional monies get put into this category. But I wouldn't count on that. And for this reason, there hasn't been a very organized way of getting that news back to people who sent in these supplement requests. But anyone is welcome to contact me to see what's going on with theirs.
Michael, I have a question. This is just general about NIAAA funding and the NIH funding. That ISA amendment that went through the House?
Yep.
Is that going to be stopped at conference?
People are working on it. There's a lot of effort going on. There's a strong feeling that individual members of Congress should not be doing peer review.
Michael, could you remind me what that is?
There are three HIV sexual behavior grants, including at least one NIAAA grant.
Two of them.
Two NIAAA. There's three total grants, and I think two of them are NIAAA that have to do with studying sexual behavior related to HIV. And there's a congressman from the sort of flat part of the country that gets bad thunderstorms that has an amendment that would fund those approved projects.
He's from California.
I thought there...
There's one from Hamilton County, too, right?
There's another one as well, but you know, your guy is in there, too. Anyway, they got enough. Other people signed on to it, and I may be confusing this with one of the guys from Kansas, but in any case, people are working on it.
Okay, because that's a bad precedent to.
This happens all the time, actually. Not a first by any stretch.
Yeah, it seems to be every 8 or 10 years there's a case like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought this one's gone farther than the other ones. So.
Yeah, I can't predict what will happen with it, but it would be a disgrace if something like this actually passed.
What I seem to recall when it happened in the past was that it actually did go through, but then somehow that portion was reversed. And I don't know what level that happened, but Charlie, you may remember Ed Wasserman was one of the targets.
Yeah, and I can't recall clearly what actually happened.
But I do remember the funding was taken away at one point.
Right. The funding was taken away, but he was able to get it back, and I don't know what the process was to achieve that.
All right, well, as long as people are working on that, and I kind of figured they were, but I didn't know when the conference was going to get together and try to rectify that. Okay. Charlie, how's your special issue coming along?
Well, I think we're doing well from the submission sides of the CFAST. I've got, Sarah's is back, and it'll be accepted today, I think. Andy's is back. I don't run that one, but I think it'll go. I'm waiting for Tatiana's to come back. They just told me they needed till mid-August to finish theirs and get it back. So those three will all be in. I've got some non-CFAST articles that are going with it, including actually two from one of our advisory boards that have been accepted, advisory panel. And so I think right now we're looking at 12, and if two others can make it back, not counting the ones I've already described, we'll have 14 articles in that special issue. At least six will be from CFAST. One that I'm on, Fung is the principal author on, we're still waiting for the revision to go back in. I'm sort of setting August the 20th as the, everybody has to get everything back in. I'm still waiting on, I believe, three to come back in by the 20th. It'll go, all go to production at that point. And the journal has it programmed right now for the first issue of 2009.
10.
2010. Well, you know, time travel back.
Retrospective publishing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what editors are for, right? it actually may be the last issue of 2009, depending on what other manuscript flow issues come up. So it's either going to be December or January. So, and unless I'm forgetting one, I think, Christina's, I'm still waiting to hear back. Jennifer, do you know about that?
There was an email went out to asking, because Carl had it, and I don't know what the status is on.
I have not, I'm actually the editor on that one, the managing editor on that one. I should probably follow up with them, because that's one I'd want to get in there. It was a little bit of an issue based on some of the things that were said, but I think they're going to get it. I think you're going to get it back in.
Right. So we made revisions, and I think Carl has the latest version, and Tina sent out an email to him.
Right, and she copied me on that email, actually.
Okay, yeah.
At least one of them. I don't know how many she sent. And so I'll follow up with her and Carl to remind them it needs to come back. So.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I actually may enforce this mid-August, you know, use it or lose it date. And
with people from California, it's become more difficult since we are now late in furlough 2 days a month.
I was wondering how much of that impact was already showing up, and you know, whether you still have offices or not. So.
Well, we're not allowed to work 2 days a month, but we get to pick what 2 days.
Other than Sunday?
And they can't be days you're teaching.
Well, you know, some of my colleagues here might like that. I don't know.
It's a fun place to be.
Oh.
All right. The item that Dan asked to put on the agenda were some of the issues related to a project that Tim Cudd is wanting to do to mesh with the choline projects of Tina Chambers and Jennifer Thomas. And I guess Tim wanted some input. Tim, do you want to comment on what the questions you had?
Right, okay. So the project, as funded, is to administer to sheep 15 milligrams per kilogram choline on the same days as the alcohol exposure. And the alcohol exposure would be 3 days a week in a row, throughout the three trimester equivalents. So it would be from conception around day four would be the first post-conception day of alcohol and choline, and it would then they would continue to receive their choline until day 133, and then they would be finished with their alcohol exposure and the choline. But, you know, what's not been determined is, or at least that I know of, you know, what sort of therapeutic levels are being created in the rat model and in humans with this supplementation? What are our targets? What are we trying to achieve in terms of supplementation? And then after discussing that question, we'll talk about for just a second on the route of administration. Does anybody?
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, that's actually one of the questions, because my recollection was you were going to have to do the administration IV in the sheep.
Yeah, actually what I want to talk about is an oral route. It turns out that choline, an unprotected choline in a food source, is completely metabolized in the rumen, but I've found a company that makes a protected form of choline. And
how's that protected?
Yeah, it's encapsulated in a sort of a wax product, and it gets past the rumen and will increase blood levels.
How detailed have the studies been on that? Do you know, Tim, to look at like the dose in and the blood levels produced over time?
Yeah, the product is designed to improve milk production. You know, it's made for dairy farmers, and choline is an important contributor to milk production. And their diet, in the diet, unless it's protected, they get zero contribution from the diet. And
you mean from the supplement?
from the supplement, but from from the supplement in the diet that's rumen protected, then various forms of it give between 20 to 25 to 40% yield. So I'm in conversation. I just have discovered this recently, and I'm in conversation with the nutritionist at the company to find out more. But I'm encouraged, and it would be a far easier and much more translational approach, I think, as Dan pointed out, to use an oral administration.
And do you know if your alcohol animals are deficient in choline?
No.
Relative to your controls?
No, and I think that this study should, optimally what we should do with this study is study choline in the control and all the different treatment groups, measure choline and measure it, or obtain blood samples and measure it. And I've got some old papers that describe methodologies on how to do this, but I think according to what I remember from Carl is that he felt that those methodologies were inadequate, and he sort of insinuated that he alone might be the only one who could measure this, but he didn't seem to be willing to do it. So that's kind of the where we are with this.
All right, so
that would make the most sense in terms
do
of...
Do you have blood stored that from animals that have already gone through your protocol, the alcohol protocol?
Yeah, we have that. We could look at some pilot numbers, certainly, maybe even a whole study.
I mean, if I could convince Carl that we needed to look at 10 samples, 20 samples, would you have that available to send to him?
I think so. I'd have to confirm that, but I'm pretty sure, yes, that I'd have that.
Because, I mean, I think that if we could show that it was deficient, it makes a stronger case that this is something worth supplementing prenatally.
Right.
But
wasn't the case in Jennifer's studies that they really weren't so deficient?
In fact, they showed elevated levels.
Right. And that, while deficiency potentiated the effects of ethanol, the animals themselves weren't deficient.
Right.
So that suggests that there may be a pharmacological effect of choline rather than just simply a repletion of something that's missing.
Yeah.
Jennifer, do you have a course for that choline levels?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a time course for the choline levels?
We don't have a time course for the choline levels. We have, again, we're kind of waiting, too, to get all the values that we have that Carl currently has. He has our, because we've sent him maternal blood, brain, and fetal blood, brain, and liver, to look at those things. We did actually take at different time points, but I think that she's going to start by just with one time point. But I think what Michael said is important, is I don't know that we necessarily have a deficiency. It might. There might be some,
it was the
immediate deficiency.
Elevated?
Yes.
I wonder if any...
So I don't think that is necessary by any means to have a deficiency.
But, I mean, you showed that deficiency augmented the effects of prenatal alcohol exposure.
Right. They exacerbate ethanol's teratogenic effects. And the data that we had to date, the only data that we have from Carl's group was just from the two litters, which seemed to show somewhat elevated choline levels, which is consistent with what Tina's found.
But there's any nutrient surge.
That's an NF2 in each group, so it's still pretty preliminary.
Hmm.
I'll feel more comfortable once we have all the data from that study to really say with confidence what's going on.
Do you know what's holding up Carl?
Tina and I talked to Jan the other week, and she was getting another person on. I know their system was down, but when we had our conference call, Jan assured us that now everything's ready to go, and she's got a new person working on it. So
all
right. That's what I can tell you. And I, you know, kind of keep hounding. And so does Tina.
Jennifer, is it possible, this is Dale, that the serum levels might be normal or maybe even elevated, but brain levels or CNS levels?
Exactly. And that's why I think it's really key for us to have all of that information before we really know what's going on. To know what the brain levels are have declined, or, you know, if the brain is actually deficient, in essence.
But I think having
the brain, the blood, and the liver is going to tell us get us a better picture of what's actually happening. But at this point, they hadn't analyzed any of the brain or liver tissue.
Yeah, but I agree with Michael's point that the choline could be driving benefits, even though it might be super physiological.
Right.
I'm going to throw out kind of a devil's advocate comment. In terms of priorities, is there a priority to look at the prenatal effects of choline or to look at the postnatal effects of choline in affected animals? Anyone have any?
Well, you know, for me, I mean, in looking at this question, the question really kind of comes down to how much you're wanting to model what Tina's doing. You know, is the question, is the goal to model what Tina's doing, or is the goal to try to maximize finding a choline effect in the new sheep model?
The other aspect is that if choline has effect on any epigenetic methylation condition, then in the early stage it could have a more profound effect.
We have a paper coming out where we've given it at the same time as alcohol, and we do find beneficial effects on a broader range of outcomes. But of course, we have more opportunity. For example, if you're giving the choline later in development, you can't look at reflex development. If you're giving it prenatally, you can look at reflex development, and we can find beneficial effects. We also found some beneficial effects even in body weight. So I think it's true that what the consequences can vary depending upon when you give it. So that's, on the one hand, I would suggest maybe, you know, giving it throughout the gestational period and maybe even beyond, if the goal is to see can choline reduce alcohol's effects in the sheep model, as opposed to, you know, again, trying to model what Tina's doing, and that's starting the administration later on.
Okay, so, Tim, you had proposed this prenatal effect, right?
Right, yeah. We'd propose giving it concurrent with the alcohol, all three trimester equivalent, and stopping at that point.
Although, at one point, we did discuss, in terms of modeling the human study in Tina's group, of starting the choline a little bit later in pregnancy, which is more akin to what could happen in humans. But I think in the final analysis, I remember we just decided to go concurrent, as I recall. So.
And there was a paper this year that choline, in fact, does affect fetal histone and DNA methylation, so in pregnant rats. So maybe Fung's idea appropriate. All right. So, Tim, what other issues did you have that you wanted to discuss with the board? I mean, Dan's question was that he thought it needed to be oral, and whether or not, and it looks like you're working with the supplier to see what it's going to how much it's going to elevate, and that was his other question.
Right. Yeah, I think this could be promising if I can obtain it. It's not supplied in the United States, and that's a question that has to be overcome. And but I imagine that this nutritionist will have a lot of information about it. I think it will be a better experiment, I think, if we can do it this way. I'd like to do that if I can get it worked out. The problem I have, though, is that if I'm to stay on schedule with this experiment, you know, we need to start it in about a month and a half.
All right. Well, is there anything that any one of us can do to help getting it going?
I think that what might potentially be useful, if there isn't sufficient information from the nutritionist that works for the company on how much augmentation we get, it might be useful to pilot a couple of animals, get the supplement, get some blood levels without and then with the supplement, and if we could get some answers back from Dr. Keene, that might be helpful. But I'm not sure we need that until I know what the nutritionist can offer us in terms of information about his product.
All right, where's this company located?
Bertonora, Italy.
Okay. Italy, yeah. Right.
And they distribute it in Canada, so if I can get permission to get it out of Canada, that's what potentially I would use.
I just found this paper here about feeding protected choline to transition dairy cows.
Right. That's what we're talking about.
University of Florida.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
The Department of Animal Science, College of Veterinary Medicine, University of Florida.
Oh.
That's your alma mater, isn't it, Tim?
One of them, yeah. So what...
Do you know Jose Santos or Fabio Lima?
No.
Well, see where they got it from. I don't know. I'll send you this thing.
Okay.
All right. Any other issues about that?
As it stands, then, I haven't heard otherwise, but in terms of the pattern, shall we agree to stick with what was proposed then in terms of when we give the choline?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
That's my opinion. Anyone else have any other comments?
Nothing on that so much as just to endorse Tim's suggestion that really, even if he decides not to go with the protected oral supplement, but to go with another route, probably IV, that there be some effort to get some data on at least serum levels with specific doses and infusion rounds or administration rounds in advance of starting the bigger study. I think any effort to get Carl to measure the choline levels with some at least pilot level manipulations would be pretty helpful.
All right, I'll see what I can do to get Carl going along on some of this. All right.
Okay.
Send this off to Tim.
I'm not coming up with that paper, Ed. If you could send that, I'd appreciate that.
Yep, I'm putting it in the mail right now. Okay.
This is Dale. Ed, I'm wondering. I don't know the assay for the choline. I assume it's not easily transported to different labs. But is this going to become a bottleneck if Carl's lab is the only one able to do this for these?
Potentially so, yes.
It is. It would be.
Dr. Keene suggests that there are not very many people in the world that can actually accomplish this assay.
Okay.
Steven Zeisel might be another. Would be another.
Who's that?
Steven Zeisel.
Yeah, he... Well, let me talk to Carl and do it, because, I mean, he's got a massive setup there, and, I mean, I know he's involved in lots of things, but maybe a bottle of wine will. you know, he lives in Sonoma and he likes his wine, so I'll see what I can do.
That'll be great.
All right. Any progress that people want to discuss on their individual projects?
Ed, I want to bring up, I haven't had a chance to talk to Tim yet, but Tim did send me some initial data from the facial measurements in sheep, which I was able to put into shape and get to Leah for some analyses. These are preliminary data with, you know, I think it's 15 measures that are similar to those taken in mice and humans. And the only data set that was large enough to analyze, and even it wasn't quite large enough for full power, were the measurements from the newborns. And, of course, they'll be measured again. They are measured again at 2 months and 5 months for those that proceed on through the protocol. And the initial analysis, we've only gotten halfway through it and looking at the individual measures first are in a multivariate approach. And the initial finding is that the alcohol treatments were not significantly affecting the facial measurements that we had in newborns. We still have to look at a discriminant function to see if there's still something hidden there that's not obvious in a combined approach for the newborns. We'll do the same thing for the 2 month and then those that are 5 months as the data come through. But I would say we have good sample sizes for the non-treated controls. They're upwards of about 30 sheep. We have poor sample sizes for the remaining groups. They're like 9 and 7 and 6, so there's not really quite enough power to be very confident that this is going to hold. But it is indicative right now that the treatments, either first trimester or all three trimesters, are not going to change the facial metrics, at least in newborns.
Okay. You know, it's going to be lots of possibilities why that happens, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I wasn't going to take bets.
I mean, you figure if, according to Ken Jones, you know, only 10 to 40% of the offspring of very heavily exposed offspring have the facial characteristics of fetal alcohol syndrome. So, you know, it's only a percentage that are affected, and so, and Tim's giving doses where he gets offspring survive, and so, you know, it's probably not surprising with small sample sizes that you're not going to detect anything. So don't be too, you know, pessimistic about it. You know.
Yeah. The one trend that was there was actually that the saline animals were had somewhat larger measurements than the normal controls, which of course we don't know what to make of, but it itself was not very very compelling either. So you know, I think what we're going to have is as Michael had suggested at the, you know, as we were preparing for the reviews, was that the facial measurements are not going to be at least dramatically affected, and maybe not significantly affected in this model.
Any other progress people want to discuss? Any papers coming out or submitted recently? Hey, Kathy?
Mm-hmm.
Has Fred Donatello been in touch with you? I think that's who it is, right?
No.
You weren't on the last conference call, but Fred does communication for NIAAA, and they're looking for a webcast. And it was suggested that the talk that you gave at the fetal alcohol study group would be an excellent addition. And so I know that both Dale and I contacted him, contacting you about it, and wondering if anything happened.
No, I haven't heard from him, but that would be fun.
Okay.
I'll follow up on it.
Okay, thank you.
Fred Donadeo, in case he contacted
you. Donadeo, that's the name. God.
Okay.
I one time forgot my sister's name, so not real good on those things.
When you forget your own name, that we worry.
Yeah.
Bob.
All right, any other issues or things that I can help with? Right now I will check with Fred, and I will also get in touch with Carl to see what we can do about facilitating choline assessments in the rats and the sheep.
Very good.
Good.
Anything else? Dale, any more comments from NIAAA?
I can't think of any right now.
Michael, anything?
Nope, I think things are good.
Yeah, I think things are progressing. We've had some reasonable discussions on the clinical group, and I think if people do check that Google, they'll see that data are certainly increasing, and we're trying to formulate a way to get the data into the database faster. Since that's where it really counts. And so I think things, even among the clinical, are moving along pretty well, or at least they're moving now. So,
Ed, I had one thing to ask about. I think in past calls you've mentioned that perhaps CFAS should have a higher profile at RSA meetings, and perhaps have a symposium or something like that. So I was trying to remember when the deadlines were for the coming cycle for RSA. Is that December?
I think symposium or later than that.
Okay.
Probably December.
Yeah. And it would be nice if we did have one going in as a group.
Yeah, it's usually the first week of December, I think.
That we should keep on the map is that ISBRA, in Paris in 2010, is also soliciting symposia, and just because this is an international consortium, it would be very nice if we had a CFAS consortium sponsored or at least largely involved symposium at ISBRA.
That's a very good idea, Michael, and you know, funding for travel is available for that meeting. It appears to be going to be available.
I think
those abstracts are due, I think,
February 15th.
But the sooner you get them in, the better, because the way the program committee seems to be doing is accepting abstracts or trying to decide on symposium right away. So the sooner you get it in, the better.
You know, we should take a moment maybe and just think about one, because ideally you need at least one, if not two, people from other countries.
Right. So I had, in fact, mentioned this symposium idea to a fellow from France, Ed, when we were up in Canada. Trying to find his name. His name is Dennis Lamblin.
Yes.
He's the president of the SAF in France, which is the FAS group in France. And he has organized a meeting there that is this September 24th and 25th, and it's actually bringing to the attention of the French government the problem of FAS. And I'm thinking that there's a website for this meeting, and I'm thinking that if we involved some of the people that they had chosen as speakers for their meeting, it would give us sort of a head start of people to pick from.
Yeah, I think a lot of those speakers are in policy. I'll have to go back and look. You know, Dennis is from the Reunion Islands.
Right, but he would be marvelous.
And his English is good enough that he could probably do.
Yeah, yeah.
The question is whether we have enough. I'll restate it. I think that we probably do have enough to talk about that we could have a basic science and a clinical symposium.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that Peter Hammond, you know, being a European, would, if we focused it perhaps maybe around the imaging.
Right. And we could have maybe one of the South Africans also.
He's from England also involved in this.
Well, would someone want to take a key role in trying to maybe put together some possibilities and circulate it among the groups?
So I'll take responsibility for trying to put a basic science one together.
Okay.
But I'm thinking that if we have an imaging one, it would be awfully nice to have a bench-to-bedside one, and Kathy's stuff should be in it. So we can't use Kathy twice. But let me think about some basic science people who are part of CFAS, and I certainly know people in Europe who would be happy to talk in the same area, just to make sure we have CFAS represented at both levels. And maybe, Ed, you can, either yourself or a designee, can take care of the imaging piece. Imaging, it doesn't have to be you, but just, you know, anyone you want to designate from CFAS who could help organize that.
Okay, let me talk to, Kathy, I'll email you about this.
Okay.
Peter, and, you know, whether we'll get two in or not, because they're overloaded, I think, or they're going to get more symposium suggestions than they're going to have slots.
Yep.
And, you know, whether to see whether or not we want to just put one in on what CFAS is doing, or whether we want to try to do two, you know, I think that's going to be a tactical decision.
Let's give it some thought. Certainly, we could have one good one, and then we could construe the basic science one as more general. Doesn't have to be.
And I have a role in this. I'm on the program committee, and I have the grant to give out the money. So I would like to lay as low as possible so it doesn't look like there's any conflict.
Yeah, so I'm on the program committee, too. I guess all the board members are on the program committee because that's who it is.
Then I think you guys should just use your influence and get us a good symposium.
Well, that's what I'd like to do, but I'd like to do it from the background. You know, that so not be in it or not be the proposer of it, so it doesn't look so blatant.
Well, let's talk about it. I think there are ways to do this.
Okay.
O'Reilly Avellian.
We'll figure it out. We'll get it in. And Paris is going to be very nice in September. And there will be some travel support. Dale, you should put in to go to that meeting. There was something else I was going to say about it, but it escapes me right now. All right, Michael, you and I, Michael, should email back and try to discuss how we want to do this.
Yeah.
And some possibilities. And, Kathy, I looked over that list from Dennis.
Yeah.
She didn't answer her phone. Thanks.
And go. And the issue there is that a lot of them, the English is not that well.
Not
so.
That good. But Dennis is very good and Dennis very compelling.
Yeah, Dennis is fine. And he's been working on this for a long time, and they have high rates in the Reunion Islands. And he was in part responsible for getting the French to put warning labels on their alcohol beverages.
Mm-hmm.
And, all right, so, yeah, let me think about it. And, Jill, don't let me forget that I've decided to think about it, all right? So we'll go from there. All right, any other comments? Thank you, one and all. And
hey, I have just one question. Tim and Charlie, did you want to talk after the conference call or wait until we have more information?
I think we should wait.
Yeah, okay. I think those are my initial questions were answered, I think.
Okay.
All right, I'll get in touch with Carl this week.
Okay.
All right, and see if he's coming down to San Diego anytime.
Yeah, we don't want to wait too long, though.
Yeah, and I'll do it this week, see if he's coming down, and I can entice him out for a round of golf and a bottle of wine and change for choline measurements. All right.
Excellent.
All righty. I'll talk to you all soon.
Thanks, Ed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.